The following program is a paid production of Mike Novak, LLC. The opinions, rants, confessions, and lame jokes presented are not necessarily the views of WCPT or its parent corporation, NewsWeb Radio.
What? Radio.
Oh.
Radio.
Uh-huh.
Yip, 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 yip.
Oh. Radio.
Radio.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Oh.
Radio.
Radio.
Yip, 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 yip.
Welcome to Back on the Beat, local and national political talk from the man who's covered it all for decades. Back on the Beat on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Here's your host, Dick Kay.
No.
Here he is again, Mike Novak. Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a pierogi's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets hard to find, temperate zones and tropic climes, true currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. He's a legendary, charismatic megafauna in his own mind. Here he is, Mike Novak.
And I gotta warn you, if you're out there today, driving around or on your bicycle, can you imagine folks on their bicycles today? And there are more and more. Every time you turn around, you see more folks riding on the cycles in the streets, especially in the winter, which is, I say, yay, good for you. It's a little slick, though. And I noticed on the way in, the roads are not good. They are not good. The surface streets in Chicago, I'm only speaking for Chicago here, because that's where I am. But they're slick. Some of them are still snow-covered. The Kennedy is partly snow-covered. The surface streets, some areas are wet, some areas are snow-covered. You're not going anywhere fast today. So, folks, try not to be in a hurry. If you're in the car right now, just take it easy. It's all right. It's a Sunday. If you're late for church, God will understand. If you skip it all together, you'll understand. You could just tune it to the show, you know? Just kick back, get yourself a cup of tea, cup of coffee, and listen to the show. I do have to mention something I didn't mention last week, and that is I got mentioned, the show got mentioned, and I posted it on my Facebook page a while back on, not the Mike Novak Show, but the other one, Mike Novak.
Well, and I should have brought that up.
Yeah, not me. Shouldn't make me
should
bring it up.
I should have brought it up. Well, I'll bring it up then. So Mike has been acknowledged as one of the top five green radio hosts in the country by
ecyclebest.com.
We, of course, think he's number one. Well, I never heard of the other four, so scratch them off the list.
I've heard actually of one of them. The others I really didn't know. And I'm, I tell you the truth, surprised there are that many in the country talking green stuff. You'd figured there would be.
Wish there were more.
Well, there, maybe there are more, and they just didn't make the top five.
Oh, could be.
You know,
it has to be.
And if you go to ecyclebest.com, I'll tell you what, it's still on that on the Facebook page. If you scroll down, you could find that and maybe pop it. Well, let's bump it up so more people see. You know, any award I can get, any accolade, I'm going to run to the bank with it. I'm waiting for my trophy. I assume that's coming in the mail. It's must be on its way. I haven't seen it yet.
I suppose it's like a sprig of asparagus or something.
It might be. Who knows? That would work. That'd be great with me. At this time of the year? Yikes. We'll have Rick DeMaio on later, but got to ask him. This is getting nutty. Talk about a winter. This is like the very first winter I was in Chicago was 78, 79.
Oh.
Okay, that was my very first winter, okay, which cost Mayor Bolandic his job.
Mm-hmm. And I got many snow days out of school.
I'm telling you, Rom, get out there, plow those streets. You got an election coming up in another year.
I was in the eighth grade, and we had a lot of snow days that year. It was fabulous. Yeah.
And I came here, and I thought, wow, Chicago's cool. They get snow all the time, and it stops the traffic, and they block the streets, and... Didn't realize that was sort of an anomaly here. So that was my introduction to Chicago. This feels like that year. I remember that year because we had all this snow and all this cold, and nothing melted till April. I mean, there were piles of the stuff sitting out there till April, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty remarkable. So need to talk to Rick DeMaio about the polar vortex, and I've heard the best description of this season, this winter season. We're going to call it the bipolar season. Woo! Okay, thank you very much. Well, that didn't ding very well. Wait, maybe I should have. I said we're going to call this the bipolar season. All right, because we've been hit twice with the polar thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I'm really bored with hearing people complain about that phrase.
The polar vortex?
Yeah, yeah. Even yesterday on the station, someone was complaining about that phrase.
I know who it was. I heard that complaint as well.
And I think just because we haven't used it doesn't necessarily mean that it's made up or that it's new. It means that it hasn't happened recently.
Right. The polar.
That's why we haven't heard this phrase, because it hasn't happened
in a
long time.
And again, we'll talk to Rick DeMaio about that. But from what I understand, the polar vortex is always there, and it's been there, and it sort of keeps that cold weather bottled up in the north, and somehow because of I don't know, climate variability. It weakened in a certain part, and so all that air dumped down here.
It was really funny.
And now it's wobbly, and it's wobbling around the North Pole. It's a drunken polar vortex. That's what's happened. There's a drunken polar vortex. Yes, Lisa, you were going to say?
I was going to say, except I just totally had a brain freeze and forgot his name. Al Roker actually posted pictures of his 1959 meteorology textbook that references polar vortex.
Good for him.
So it's not new.
No, it is not new.
It's
Rick DeMaio.
Rare.
We might even get him on a little early so we can see what the heck is going on. Today in the green room with Mike, Patricia Hill, author of Design Your Natural Midwest Garden. Now, that book's been out for a while, but I have been meaning to have Pat Hill on the show for a long time. So I finally said, let's do this, especially since she sent me this week this lovely link to native plants, and that's what she does. Works in native plants, and she showed me these wonderful photos, had them posted on her website, in the winter. How well natives do in the winter and how beautiful they look. And we'll talk about some, and obviously how well they thrive despite cold weather because they're used to this stuff, right? Isn't that the thing we always say? They've been dealing with this for millennia. So Patricia Hill will be on in the green room. Second hour, boy, it just never ends. The battle over frack sand mines in LaSalle County, which is turning in. Even the Tribune said it's going to be like driving through a sandbox. When the Tribune says that, you know that it's serious. There's something going on there. And basically what's going on, the land's being bought up and annexed and then licenses for big frack sand mines are being issued and then they're being dug and then goodbye farmland.
Well, I'm so excited.
Goodbye tourism.
Ashley Williams on in the second hour.
Right. So Ashley Williams, who describes herself, self-described as a fractivist and fracksandivist in LaSalle County, will be here because she alerted me to an ongoing hearing about the annexation of a parcel of land to the town of Utica to be used for a frack sand mine. And the good citizens there have been sitting with their council, with the board of trustees and the commission to decide whether this should go there. They did a meeting. It didn't get everything done in the first meeting, so they had a second and continued it into the second and continued it into the third, continued it into the fourth. This is the fifth time they've met, which is basically a continuation of the same meeting that has gone on for roughly 24 hours to discuss this. Well, at least people are engaged, which they should be. And I hope some folks in the area in LaSalle County are listening because this is important. So she will be here, Ashley Williams. Monty Whipple, who's a Waltham Township resident. Waltham Township is where the mine will be dug. He would be kitty quarter from it. So he's going to talk about it. And Stephen Penn, who is part of Penn Rakowski, you might have heard their new sponsors. I'm not getting that bell. What is...
It's pass it over.
It's a dunk instead of a ding. There we go. I don't know what's going on. Stephen Penn with Penn Rakowski, you've heard that they're a new sponsor on the Mike Novak Show. And really, because they fit the mission so well, they do dust law. And he's going to talk about silicosis and how the folks in that area might be exposed to silica dust and what that could mean. They also handle mesothelioma cases. And I'm going to ask him about Petcoke as well. Because I don't know if you saw the article. This is really, really frustrating, too, about how the Illinois board rules against the emergency rules on Petcoke on the south side. I haven't talked to Tom Shepard from the Southeast Environmental Task Force yet about that. Governor Pat Quinn and the Illinois EPA had filed a request with the Illinois Pollution Control Board to craft emergency rules. And the Illinois Pollution Control Board basically said, They ruled 4-0 that Quinn and the EPA had failed to show there was an imminent threat to public health. Yeah, and, you know, don't pay any attention to that dust sitting on your windowsill. That's just an illusion. So we might talk about that as well. Okay, we need to get to the green room. Pat Hill will be with us in just a second, so stick around for that.
If you've ever filed a lawsuit, you know that it can be stressful, even traumatic. And if you've been exposed to asbestos, silica dust, or other lung toxins, you're going to need a law firm that can guide you through the legal maze efficiently and effectively. The attorneys of Penn Rakowski are exactly who you're looking for. They view each client and their needs as unique. They're focused on one thing and one thing only, lung disease. And they're based right here in Illinois and Wisconsin. The lawyers at Penn Rakowski have been representing individuals suffering from lung disease and their families for a combined 35 years. And because they're local, they can come to you. They've successfully represented asbestos workers, electricians, carpenters, machinists, and others throughout both states. Contact Penn Rakowski at dustlaw.com or call them toll-free at 888-LUNG-LAW. That's 888-586-4529. Penn Rakowski, local, committed, caring.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. As we head into yet another brutal cold spell, you might have heard about trees being taken down. And this is an article that Rick DeMaio actually sent to me. Taken down because of splits in the bark caused by freezing temperatures. While trees are living organisms and have sap inside, this does freeze. And the result is pops cracks. Wood and trees move, twist, and bend. When the weather gets to extremes, this could result in cracks. A crack now does not mean the tree needs to be removed. Inspection from a certified arborist to evaluate the tree could result in pruning to reduce weight, aerial cabling, rod growth regulator to slow growth. That's an interesting tactic. Or crown reduction pruning. These are all tools to help minimize risk. And remember that not all trees respond the same way with these cold temperatures. The best thing for you to do is to pick up the phone and talk to a certified arborist at the Care of Trees. Call 800-508-9466. 800-508-9466. Or go to their website, thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
It's time to step in the green room.
Life's a garden, dig it. You make it work for you.
And that's it. That's our intro. And with that, we go to the phone line and talk. Dennis Sheeter in the control room going, yeah, yeah. What a great intro. It is. Patricia, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
Good morning. How are
Good
you?
Good morning.
There you are. You wake up and you see your beautiful native plants covered with even more snow.
Yes, yes.
And if you're a gardener who uses natives, I imagine you can just kind of, you know, pull the covers back over, roll over, go to bed because nothing bad's going to happen to them.
No, no, no. Our prairie plants are used to this type of thing.
I told people that you are the author of Design Your Natural Midwest Garden.
That's correct.
Which has been out for a while. And I guess the interesting thing about it is that the word design is in the name of that book. How does that make your book a little different from other books? Although I think I know the answer. I'll let you explain it.
Well, there are 32 garden designs in the book that for instance, an entrance garden or a patio or let's see, patio, I'm looking at the book.
Oh, it's okay. You're allowed to flip through your own book. That's okay. Use your cheat sheet there.
Patios and terraces. Here's one for a private side yard. Here's one for a border, a long prairie border. Not many of us plant borders anymore, but you definitely can do that. Here's one for
and to describe that, when you say border, what do you mean exactly?
Well, that's pretty much an old fashioned thing to do. I don't know if it's done so much anymore, but you plant perennials in a long border along your side property line, and generally you have tall ones at the back and mid-sized ones in the middle, and then you have edging plants. And
that's, you know, usually when I do garden talks, that is my secret for the gardeners. I say you want to know the secret of gardening design, and it is, and I tell them to write this down: put the little plants in front of the big plants.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Mostly. I have one of my signature things that I do is I plant one prairie dock in the front of a border, because of course while it's 8 or 10 feet tall, it's just the stems and flowers are small, and you can see right through them, and you have this big cluster of the prairie dock leaves in front, which is eye catcher. So That's an exception to the rule.
Okay. Well, and I'm sure there are other exceptions to the rules. There are some other grasses that are not going to be huge barriers. I imagine that will have some airiness about them that allow you to see through, right?
Right. Anything that's sort of wispy, even if it's tall, it can go in the front row.
Mm-hmm.
A see-through plant.
Let me ask you a question about that, because folks call me and write to me, and they say, first of all, they say, what are the plants I should use? And then they say, where can I get them? Now, I'm sure that in the last, decade since, and as you've been doing this, over several decades, that's changed a little bit. Do you find that it's easier to get the plants you need to put in native gardens?
Well, it's always been easy for me because there have been Midwest Ground Cover mostly sells wholesale, and they bought out the Natural Garden,
right?
Which was both wholesale and retail, and so we were very fortunate to have these close by.
Mm-hmm.
So I've never had a problem, and Midwest Ground Cover is now supplying plants to other local nurseries, so they are easier to find.
Mm-hmm.
And also a good place to get them is all sorts of, for instance, Wild Ones groups have plant sales, native plant sales in the spring in April, and that's really a good place to get them.
Right, and a number of places have those plant springs. We broadcast this show last year from the...
out at McHenry College.
Out at McHenry College, the WPPC.
Oh, did you? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
It was really good fun.
Okay.
And they do it. I understand that Jack Pizzo has a nursery now, and he's selling native plants. So, really, there's little excuse for not being able to find anything. I mean, there's something out there, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there is. There is. I think you can even find prairie drop seed at a big box store. So even there, sort of...
prairie drop seed at a big box store? Wow, the world has changed. Oh, my goodness.
Isn't it?
I would think most people wandering through a big box store will look at that and say, what the heck is that? And what do I do with it? And what would you tell them if they say that they look at prairie drop seed and no idea what it is? What would you say to sell that plant to them?
Oh, I think it's extraordinarily beautiful, and it certainly goes in the front of the border. You could line a sidewalk with it. You could put that along if you want a foundation plant. You could put it along your foundation on a sunny side. You can use it as a matrix for other...
I've seen that movie.
Now, what's a matrix?
You got to hand a shovel to Keanu Reeves when you do that, right?
No, thank you.
but Lisa wants to know exactly what do you call a matrix?
Well, it would be a foundation of... I'm sure you've been to Morton Arboretum, and their entrance garden is a matrix of prairie drop seed, and then they have all sorts of other native flowers within the clumps, between the clumps of prairie drop seed. It's beautiful.
Okay. I'll have to pay attention now that I know it has a name.
Yeah, well, because you got to understand here, Pat, that Lisa wants to transform her building. In fact, maybe we should offer her some help right now because...
Well, actually, when I heard that you were going to be on the air today, Pat, I wanted to ask you a bunch of questions because we do have... Well, we have some old shrubs that I'm not a big fan of, but we have a traditional yellow brick walkway, historic yellow, Chicago brick. And then I think we have some, it's a little bit of a wider area, maybe 5-6 feet. And so I was thinking that we could do some tall things up against the brick and maybe something that might have some color to it in the winter, some grasses, and then some lower native plants that are going to have, less maintenance.
You're talking against the foundation of your of your house?
For the the taller things, yeah, because there aren't many windows there. So I think that we could play against the brick nicely.
But she also has this walkway, and the building next door has a walkway, and they have a walkway, and in between there's this patch.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're talking about. And, yeah, and that would make a nice place to show off some plants there. And how much sun per day would you say that gets, Lisa?
You know, as the solar expert on the show, I've been meaning to actually measure my sunshine because I have all these devices that I use on a roof to determine how much sunshine's on a roof, and so I need to use them for my garden.
Yes, you do.
So I'm not sure.
Do you get more than 6 hours?
In the little patch, not so much, but maybe up against the brick, close to that.
Because 6 hours is considered full sun.
Yeah, I think up against the brick I do, but in the little patch in the middle I don't.
Well,
so I think that gives me a lot of variety then.
Well, what I was going to ask is, okay, let's talk about an area that, say, gets 4 hours. Pat, what do you recommend for that? Because I know I saw some of the plants that you had out there. And by the way, go to MikeNovak.net, go to this week's show, and click on the link there when... it says, if you look at the phrase "grace the winter landscape," and it has a bunch of the plants that Pat has out there.
Illinois EPA had filed a request with the.
Wait a minute! I just.
What happened there?
I'm sorry. Well, I had I was listening to your show on
the stream
on my computer.
Oh.
I closed it up, but then when I opened it again, somebody started talking.
Oh, sure. I just launched a browser.
There I was, a blast from the past on my own show. So if somebody had, say, 4 hours, what kind of plants would have sun? What would you recommend for that?
Well, 4 hours would be considered a savanna, which is part shade, part sun.
Right.
Which has just a wide variety of plants. Purple coneflower, for instance, does well in that situation.
You know what? I've noticed that, too. Purple coneflower actually is remarkably tolerant of shade.
It is. It's in nature. It's found in savannas.
Mm-hmm. So there, we start with the but that's like the... the star. Everybody knows about purple coneflower. What would be a plant that people are less likely to know about that would look wonderful?
Butterfly weed will grow in part shade.
Okay, now we have to again, make sure people are not thinking of butterfly bush.
Yeah, correct.
And it's a shame they call it weed because it makes people...
I know. I've said that. Whoever named butterfly bush was a genius.
Weed.
Yeah, same with milkweed. We've been saying we've got to get rid of that that name milkweed. We should call it monarch plant or something, you know?
Yeah.
Because
pioneers saw these flowers growing in the wild, and so they just tacked the name weed on to many of them.
Yeah, but you know, the rebranding is in the 21st century is a lot easier than it used to be, I think.
Yeah, you're right.
So there we go. But butterfly weed, which is Asclepias, and there are several kinds. Which kind do you like? It depends on what the soil is like, right?
Yeah, I'm fortunate. I live in 1927 Sears bungalow. That was built, as I just said, in 1927, and in those days they didn't scrape the topsoil off, and so I just have wonderful dirt. It's a good soil. It's a good reason to buy an older house.
And it's the reason we hate you so much, Pat.
Yeah.
It's
just... Yeah, I've never amended my soil at all.
Wow. And where is that? Where are you located?
In Elgin.
Elgin, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And if there are places like that, snap them up, because as Pat Hill says, you want that soil. But,
yeah, you do.
So you said you have very good soil, which means I assume you can grow several types of butterfly weed.
Well, there's only one type of butterfly weed. There's many, many kinds of asclepias.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. You're right. There's different kinds of asclepias. Do you grow more than one type of asclepias?
No, I don't. In fact, I even had a blog about the various kinds of asclepias, and they aren't too well. They aren't found too often. Is one problem.
Uh-huh.
You probably have to send away for them. And the one thing, though, I can't grow is wetland plants, or I'd have to water them, and of course I won't do that. And so I have planted swamp milkweed, but it just didn't do well. It died.
Huh. Is that a source of pride with you that you don't water your plants?
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's one of the big things about native plants. You have to water them for the first couple of years till they're established, and then they honestly don't need water. I've got pictures.
I know, and I'm looking
at dead grass and live plants.
and I'm looking at them right now, and they include, as you mentioned, compass plant before, and a prairie dock, and Culver's root. Culver's root is a lovely plant.
Yeah, it is. And those are all good snow plants because they're taller than the snow, for one thing.
Uh-huh.
they're taller than the snow is deep, so they do make a statement.
Well, you know, this is actually this year is a real test for these plants in terms of not so much of their survivability, because you know they'll come back, but in terms of their aesthetic quality in the winter, because there have been so many snows and they get, you know, plants get beat down a little bit over the winter.
Oh, yeah. This heavy snow will knock a lot of them down. As I mentioned, prairie dropseed. And this much snow doesn't do all that well because it gets knocked down.
Uh-huh.
This little blue stem has a stiffer type blade, and of course then it turns copper in the winter. So that's just a wonderful grass for winter.
Yeah, I think somebody, and I'm checking here. I think that somebody mentioned that on my site. And I can't find it right now, but when I posted that you were going to be on the show, somebody was like, yay, little blue stem.
Yeah, that's a wonderful winter plant.
Yeah, it is. By the way, people should know, if we talked about wild ones before, you can go to wildones.org. /chapters, and it'll give you the chapter near you. It's wildones.org, wildones.org/chapters. And in Illinois, there's a Greater DuPage chapter. There's the Illinois Prairie chapter. There is the Lake to Prairie chapter.
And there's a new one that's just forming that's in the Oak Park River Forest area. I think it's called Western Cook.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, yeah.
And as we mentioned, that's a good place to find out information about native plants. So before I let you go, Pat, I wanted to talk a little bit about what is it you do as we get out of winter. We will get out of winter someday.
This is like winters used to be, Mike.
I know.
It's not unusual.
For us old timers.
Yeah, yeah.
This is how we grew up. You know,
it's winter, yeah.
You put the booties and the mittens on.
Yeah.
And you just go out and you deal with it.
That's right.
What is it you do in preparation for spring with natives? I imagine
I burn.
Do you?
I do a control burn. Yeah. Even and I do have a small lot. It's 50 feet wide by 120 feet deep. And of course, I do cut down the things that are next to the house. But I have a long border along. I'm on a corner.
Uh-huh.
A long border along the sidewalk, and I have prairie gardens in all my, well, we call them tree banks. Other people call them parkways.
Uh-huh.
And I I do it slowly. You have to get a permit from the Illinois EPA, and then
what about local? What about Elgin? What do they say about it?
You have to get a permit from the city manager, actually, and you have to notify the fire department. You have to send a note around to all your neighbors. There's a lot of things you have to do, and there's some neighbors that usually help me. And I do it slowly, though. I don't, I don't set the whole thing on fire at once. I just start at one end, and it goes slowly. It takes longer, but.
And when you say longer, how long does the burn take for your property?
Oh, it'll take 3, 4, 5 hours.
Okay. But we're not talking 3, 4, 5 days, just 3, 4, 5 hours.
No.
Yeah.
It'll be done in one day.
Well, what about, if you can't burn, how effective is it just to cut stuff back?
Well, it's not as effective, of course, because burning puts all the nutrients back into the soil. And it also helps the seeds to germinate. It also... destroys any woody plants that might have seeded themselves in there.
Oh, some of the invasives.
And yeah. I wouldn't be able to do that in Chicago.
No, you would not. You would not. Especially right up, not right up against.
I'm surprised you can do it in Elgin.
I am kind of surprised at that, too. I wonder how many municipalities allow burning in the Chicago area. Do you have any idea, Patricia?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't.
Could we take any callers?
But
do we have time?
No, we're done.
I just looked at the time at the clock as I asked the question.
We are out of here, but one of the things I wanted to say is at Millennium Park, one of the things they're doing though is cutting plants down and leaving the detritus there to be absorbed back into the soil. And that is a way to go. I know you say it doesn't provide.
Yeah, why don't they burn at Millennium Park?
You know, that's a really good point. I'm sure that there's a long list of rules that about that sort of thing. It would be certainly an educational experience. Also, they'd have to worry about it's so public and so out there in the open. I can't imagine. And it's also, it's a rooftop.
Yeah.
That's part of the problem. It's over the garage. It's really a rooftop garden, a Lurie garden in Millennial.
Yeah, but
Park.
There's a lot of soil
Millennium
between,
Park.
Between the plants and the roof.
There's some, it's interesting. It undulates. There's some areas are deeper than others. Some are not that deep at all. Well, anyway, that's Patricia Hill. The name of her book is Design Your Natural Midwest Garden. But even more importantly, you just go to her website, naturalmidwestgarden.com, and you've got all kinds of categories that people can take a look at about putting in plants, like butterflies, ecology, entrance gardens, fall garden, lawns, natural world, rain, spring garden. I mean, it on and on, and pretty much anything you want. And I really enjoy getting your emails. I got on your email list, Pat, and I love the stuff you send out every so often. I'm not sure how regular it is, but, for instance, one of the things you sent out.
I try to do once a week, but it doesn't always happen.
I know. I get that. And, I saw the one about the butterflies. What's happened to the butterflies last year? I'm sure you're going to be following that again this year. I have to ask this question before you go. Do you think our butterflies are in crisis?
It seems that way. I sure didn't see any. I didn't have more than half a dozen butterflies all summer. And I had... I think maybe one or two monarchs, and that's just never been the case before.
Yeah, I saw exactly 5 monarchs last year. I counted them because it.
Well, you saw more than I did.
Yeah, and that's amazing because one of them was right in front of my house in Logan Square in the city, and I thought, "You poor guy, get out of here, go south."
Yeah, And normally I just have tons and tons and tons of them.
Yeah, there are
a lot of bees. Lots of bees, but butterflies were not to be seen this summer.
The canary in the coal mine. The butterfly in the coal mine.
Afraid of.
That's me too. I think it's a topic we better do soon on the show. Patricia Hill, thank you so much for being on the program. Let's do it again. Natural.
Yeah, well, thanks for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
You got any speaking engagements coming up?
Yes, I do. I have, one in April. There's a Wild Ones in Bloomington, and I'm going down there.
Illinois or Indiana?
Illinois.
Okay.
And I'm doing my a new one there, which is called A Midwestern Gardener's Manifesto. And then I'm doing one in this Oak Park Riverside chapter I was just talking about.
Right.
And I'm doing that in May.
Great.
So that's what I've got set up now.
Fabulous. Well, and I'm sure it'll be posted at your website, so folks should go to naturalmidwestgarden.com. Patricia Hill, we will talk soon. Have a great, lovely end of winter.
Okay.
All right. Take care now.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, and streaming worldwide on chicagosprogressivetalk.com. You can also find that link at mikenovak.net. Now, if you were following Landreth Seed Co. on Facebook this weekend, you were treated to potato madness. Yes. Oh, wait a second. I needed to play this before we finish our segment.
In the green room.
Yiddy. There we go. Got to get that out of the way. Where was I? Oh, yeah. Potato madness on the Facebook page for Landreth Seed Co. They didn't exactly call it that. I did. But Landreth has been featuring some of the great potatoes that you should be growing in 2014. I'm telling you, after harvesting a couple of bushels last year, I am a potato freak. Just had to let you know that. So if you go to Landreth Seed Co. on Facebook or to LandrethSeeds.com, get a hold of their great catalog, you'll find varieties like Ozette Seed Potatoes, one of the rarest heirloom varieties, or the Red Thumb Fingerling Potato, which has a brilliant red skin and flesh that varies from light to deep pink. The progenitors of Red Thumb were Peruvian. Or you could go whole hog and order the ancient purple fingerling potato, purple Peruvian, among the oldest of the potato varieties under cultivation today. What? You say you want something new? Well, how about the Colorado Rose, a fairly new potato that was developed by the legendary potato scientist, and I didn't know there were legendary potato scientists, but I guess there should be, Dr. David Holm, who has spent more than 35 years at Colorado State University breeding potatoes. And, of course, there are many, many, many more varieties. You need to go to LandrethSeeds.com or their Facebook page, Landreth Seed Co., or call 800-654-2407, 800-654-2407. D. Landreth Seed Company, purveyor of fine seeds since 1784.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I don't want you to be left out. Here's what I'm talking about. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakening Chicago to improve their lives than any other health or wellness magazine. If you're a green, natural health, or wellness business, you should be part of the leading sustainability resource in the country. Natural Awakenings is packed with information that our readers use to find the products and services they need to live happier, healthier lives. Natural Awakenings is available for free each month throughout the city and north and northwest suburbs. We're placed in more than 1,100 area locations, ensuring the right eyes read about your products and services. We're also online at nachicagonorth.com. We're local, we're independent, and our readers will help you grow your business. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Sleigh bells ring, I listen. In the lane, snow is glistening. A beautiful sight we're having tonight. Walking in a winter wonderland. Gone away is the bluebird.
You see, Christmas never went away. Actually, this is not a Christmas song. This is a winter song, right? Hello, Lisa.
Sorry, the microphone there. And then I couldn't see the
button. Just to hit the button.
I couldn't find it. Yes, this is wintry. See,
this is
no
wintry.
Reference of Santa.
No, Santa at all. Just sort of, you know.
Winter wonderland.
Winter wonderland. See?
You know, the good thing about the snow when it's cold, it's light and fluffy, like snow globe snow.
It is.
It's sparkly.
When it's this cold,
pretty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Before we get to Rick DeMaio, who's, I'm sure, going to comment on that, I just want to make sure I'm seeing some tweets here. Guys, let me know when you get some good tweets in.
Well, and I was actually about to say, too, well, I can save it for the top of the hour.
Go ahead.
David Zaber chimed in that burning also volatilizes nitrogen, which is very important for the environment.
He always has something interesting to add. He's just remarkable. And Ecology Plus Vision retweeted. Was that our tweet there, Carol? Or who tweeted that first? Do you have any idea? Is your mic not on? I don't hear you.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. Well, anyway, some of the favorite native plant nurseries in Chicagoland, Possibility Place. Let's not forget PossibilityPlace.com. And Pizzo Nursery, as I said, West Cook Wild Ones, NK Wild Ones. I don't know exactly what NK stands for. I should, but I don't. Those are some of the other places that you can go to. Let's bring in our meteorologist, Rick DeMaio, so that we can say, what the heck?
As Patricia Hill said, thanks for calling, Mike.
I'm not sure what that
Rick.
Means.
You know what it means. You called me, right?
So, yeah, I know. I called you, so say something.
Oh, my God, there's so much to talk about. Yeah, we can squeeze it all in 9 minutes and 30 seconds.
I think we can do it. We have the technology.
I heard you talking at the top of the show about how Al Rocha mentioned that in his 1959 textbook it said polar vortex. And good for Al Rocha, really, because we have all these silly names thrown around by the Weather Channel like Janus and Eos and all this other stuff. But the one thing that everybody's going to remember is polar vortex.
That's right.
Yes, the sun of the polar vortex returns over the next couple of days. So.
You know what? And I'm excited because I never went outside and threw hot boiling water in the air. So I'm going to do it this time.
Lisa, you'll get a chance to do it definitely tomorrow. And you know what?
Be upwind.
Yes. Be upwind.
A little wind. Hey, I don't know if you need much wind. As long as the water is hot and, you know.
No. I'm saying that you don't want it blowing back on you, so be upwind of what you're doing.
Some people scalded themselves across the country.
Because they don't know which way the wind is blowing.
Right. We'll talk to Bob Dylan about that, right? And another thing you could do, and believe it or not, this was suggested by one of my TAs up at University of Wisconsin back in January of 85 when we had the really, really super-duper cold weather that came through Chicago, obviously the Midwest, is to get a nice beefsteak tomato, not an heirloom, but a beefsteak tomato, and put it outside, and then the next day you can actually bounce it off the sidewalk. Seriously. Because the fibrous, spongy nature of the tomato and the amount of water that is in there.
So it becomes rubbery?
Well, I guess it becomes rubbery, but down to 20 below, it has the ability to withstand being thrown off pavement and not crack. So it'll literally bounce back up almost like a pool ball. It's unbelievably cool. Yeah.
All right. Well, if anybody else has any fun in the cold tips other than blowing bubbles and throwing water in the air, post them on our Facebook page and we'll give you a plug.
But otherwise, you know, get out and enjoy today. It's not too bad out there right now. Even though temperatures are in the teens, the Arctic cold front is not going to hit until about 9 p.m., so we keep hearing all this terrible news about how awful the weather is going to be today, and it's really not going to be bad. I know, Mike, you said earlier about how the side streets are in bad shape, and I agree. If Mayor Emanuel wants to score some points, bring a plow down the side streets, because in that last event, they were horrible. And the only thing that really saved them was the fact that we ended up warming up and had some rain, and you know, Mother Nature did its toll on it.
Yeah.
The side streets are bad. The main streets are good, and we have some sun breaking out now. But readings today, temperature readings, that is, are actually going to rise at ahead of the Arctic front. So we can easily see 22, 23 degrees later on this afternoon. And then by this time tomorrow, it's probably going to feel, I'm not kidding you, about 50 degrees colder. So the core of the cold air will hit late tonight, most likely after about 3 a.m., through tomorrow morning, and linger all the way into Tuesday. So this event is going to be as cold as the last one from a meteorological standpoint. But I think from a human perspective and human nature standpoint, it'll be worse, because everybody at this point is now getting completely tired and sick of it, and mentally it really drains you.
Well, but it also seems like it's going to be slightly longer than the other one.
You know what? I have to differ on that. Because
oh, really? Okay.
I know that there were some stats posted that we only had 36 hours of continuous sub-zero weather. But, you know, when it got above zero, it was 2, 3, 4 degrees above zero, and it went right back down to below zero. It went up to, like, 5 above, and it went right back down to below zero. So, you know, I think we create these benchmarks in the field of meteorology just because it's a fat number, like zero. Everything above that is not as cold. Everything below that is cold. I think that's nonsense, really. I mean, who says that that's actually a number that we should use as a benchmark for how long a cold period has lasted?
Well, and it's absurd on its face. I was looking up absolute zero this week simply because I got so crazed by the idea that we're negative temperatures. What does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. It's arbitrary.
Yeah, I know, but don't go to absolute zero. That's minus 273 Kelvin.
I know. Kelvin. Let's go with Kelvin.
But, I mean, you do need a benchmark, without a doubt. We've had 15 days where it's been zero or lower. Okay, we averaged 8 to 10. The record is 25. So to say that this event will be anywhere close to the last event, I think from a meteorological standpoint it will be, but in the end, I think from a human nature standpoint, from a mental standpoint, this is going to be worse because people are really getting tired of it. It's like you know, you go through the first, you know, part of school and you fail a test and you go, oh, what did I do wrong? Then you get to the second one, you go, you know, I failed it, but it didn't really make that big of a difference. And then you kind of go through, and after a while, you build up this resistance, but resistance to cold weather when, you know, you're trying to get out and about and do things, and you're trying to get your kids to school, and you're trying to get your car to start, really takes a toll. So from a standpoint of numbers per se, we may actually be colder if we get down to about minus 18 to minus 20 Tuesday morning. And by this time tomorrow afternoon, we're going to have highs again where we were with that last event, where they didn't actually top out at minus 11. Now, for the calendar date, that particular event, we had a low of like minus or a high of like minus 1 at 1 a.m. This one, I think, is going to be much colder for a specific shorter period of time, but overall the duration is going to be just about the same.
Okay, now briefly, because I know we don't have a lot of time here, what is going on? What is happening with the polar vortex?
You know,
why are we getting this?
I think the best way to look at it, Mike, is the fact that we lost so much Arctic sea ice over the last couple of years. What I've noticed, and I've talked to a couple of friends about this, is the amount of snow cover that happens earlier in the year across central sections, I say northern areas of Canada, the intersections of Russia, even into Mongolia, has actually increased earlier in the season, okay? So what happens if you lose that Arctic sea ice due to global warming, you end up getting these massive Arctic sea ice outbreaks, or I should say Arctic sea snow outbreaks, similar to when we have lake effect snow. So people say, well, wait a minute, I thought we're supposed to have global warming. Well, true, parts of the northern latitudes have warmed, but when you go from ice to water, you're able to create this early season snowpack. So what has happened is the area surrounding the North Pole has actually gotten warmer adjacent to the pole, but the areas about maybe 70 to about 60 degrees north latitude have actually shown more increase in snowpack early in the year. So what has happened is the polar vortex says, I want to go where there's more snow, so it's actually shifted south. Now remember, last couple of winters, they had brutally cold weather in Europe.
Yeah.
The polar vortex basically slipped into Western Russia and Eastern Europe and stayed there for about 2 months. We never had anything here.
Mm-hmm.
This
mm-hmm.
year, it slipped southward into Central Canada and stayed there. And because we had such an active typhoon season, we set up almost this trap where all this warm water got stuck in the Eastern Pacific, all this cold air got bottled up in Northern Canada, and thus that's the pattern that we're in.
So in
this is more so a result of climate change and climate variability, which is really the backside of global warming. So when people say, well, it's not doing that, it is, but it is just doing it worse in some cases.
That's a great explanation. So for the climate change deniers who use the cold weather as an example are actually proving the opposite point.
Oh, well, they're not smart. So I listen to that. I look the other way. It's actually kind of comical.
All right. So what do we got the next couple of days here?
Well, so far, this January, 12 degrees colder than last January. December was 13 degrees colder than last December. And basically, anywhere between 0 and 10 below for a high tomorrow and 0 and 10 below for a high on Tuesday, 15 below for a low tomorrow, 20 below Tuesday, and finally getting above 0 during the day on Wednesday, and then maybe some more snow by the end of the week. But overall, the coldest time of the year is right now, and it's definitely living up to its building.
Wow. And of course, your warning, be safe, folks. Don't do anything dumb out there.
I think in the city of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel wants to score some points with the parents and the school teachers. Cancel class tomorrow and Tuesday. And just treat them as a snow day.
Just yeah, they haven't. I was just on the city website, and they have not
closed the same thing happened last time.
And we did it the last second.
And the last second, and here we go again. Let's check on that and see if there's any word on that. Rick DeMaio, thank you so much. You stay warm, too. I'll talk to you next week.
Take care, Mike.
Bye-bye. That's a really good point. I think we should check that out and see.
Oh, no, I'm already on the city website. The schools are not closed.
And they took hell for this last time.
A lot of suburban schools are not closed.
They
either.
Don't seem to have their ducks in a row here. That's very, very strange. All right. Second hour, we talk about frack sand mining in LaSalle County. I hope you stick around.
Of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And as I mentioned before, streaming worldwide on the webby web internets. And, of course, podcasts available at MikeNovak.net. Sometimes I get to them on Sunday. Sometimes I get to them on Thursday. Sometimes in between. You just never know. But I hope you subscribe and get a chance to listen to the show. And I should mention that we have from the team here this morning, Lisa Albrecht, And Carol Brewer, Sarah, the lovely Sarah Batka, is on location someplace. But I think she's tweeting today, isn't she?
Yeah, she is.
I don't necessarily recognize her tweets specifically. I was looking at some of the ones that are coming in. There is a Shiloh Bisnet. I don't know who that is, but I appreciate Shiloh listening and or tweeting. Better to call it a tuberosa. We're talking about butterfly weed, the plants with unfortunate names that get treated with less respect because the word weed is in them, like milkweed. And Shiloh says, better to call it a tuberosa, lest neighbors or city think it's a weed. And you know that. We've had that problem in the city of Chicago. But they're working on it. You know, I will have to, that's another thing I have to have on the show, another issue I need to delve into, because I know I've been in communication with people who are trying to make that less of an issue in the city of Chicago by educating the people who give out tickets for that sort of thing, so that there is some sense to it, that if people are putting native plants in their front yard, they're not going to get ticketed because they have weeds, especially when we are losing so much habitat, hand over fist, in this country. And we need to restore some of that and put in some plants that our butterflies can take advantage of. It's just, as I said to Pat Hill, it seems like we're at a crisis point here with butterflies. I don't know if that's exactly true. I'm not an entomologist, but I sure would like to talk to one about that. I'm looking at the guy opposite me in the studio. Man, you're all dressed up. What? This is just radio, dude.
It's always business, Mike.
That is Stephen Penn from Penn Rakowski. Fine sponsor of the Mike Novak Show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
It's great to have you in the studio. And that's because, and as I mentioned earlier, part of the way this has all come together with you and me is because you listened to the show. You basically started as a listener.
Correct, yes.
To the show and liked what I had to say and the things I was covering. And so put your money where your mouth is, which is, I always love that. You know, if any other people out there are considering that, please give me a call. You're welcome anytime to advertise. This is environmental capitalism here.
Right, right. You and I have discussed this, and when I started listening to your show, it was strictly gardening, and you were on the second part of another. There was another show I listened to primarily, and continued to listen to you.
You're talking about Mighty House?
Mighty House,
yeah,
correct.
Yeah, when we had Self Help Sunday.
Yeah, that's exactly
the
right.
The late, great
that's
Self Help
right.
Sunday.
They went to Saturdays, and unfortunately, I'm in the office Saturdays, so I don't listen to them anymore, but you're still on. And your show, in my opinion, had evolved from not just gardening, which, you know, is wonderful. It inspired me to start, and I'm all thumbs, but I enjoy getting out there in the, 2 weeks.
All green thumbs.
And the 2 weeks of summer that we have, I enjoy doing it. But you got into the environmental issues, and that's right up our alley. And you and I have talked, and I think I told you a few weeks back I was coming from out of town listening, and you had a doctor call in, and the discussion had just, in my opinion, really reached a level of Tom Hartman-esque wonkiness where really people are engaged, they're involved, they're interested, and these are really important issues. And you're the only one that I know that's bringing these things to the forefront. They've got to be talked about. We're outmanned. It's big business, big money, and people are going to be impacted, affected, and forever. Once, as you said, once the sandbox is created, there ain't no redoing it. You're done.
And that's the point of Penn Rakowski. You guys do dust law. How is it that you decide to wander into that field exclusively?
It was purely by accident. I had done plaintiff side injury work. I've always believed personally in helping the little guy, and it just worked out. I had a medical malpractice type background in law, and a position opened up at a firm that did occupational exposure. And it was an opportunity for me to go from taking the medical interest I had and applying it to products and environmental law, which I also found interesting. So that was 95 and 94, actually, and it's been that way ever since. And I enjoy it very much. It's a great, rewarding area of the law. You're dealing with people that are truly sick and injured, and the ability to help them is very rewarding. I enjoy it. If I couldn't do this, and I've told people, if I couldn't do this, I'm not sure I'd really want to do anything else in the law.
Hmm. That's very interesting. And so that's how I got to know you, is that when we started talking about this, and it was about 2 years ago when I first became aware of the frack sand mine that was going to be constructed outside of the eastern entrance of Starved Rock State Park. Started talking about this, and you wrote a couple of times and said, hey, you know, that stuff is not good. It's bad juju.
Correct.
And, you know, your listeners should know about that. And so I sat up and paid attention, and I'm glad that we've been able to continue that conversation. So with that, it sounds like a good time to go to the phones and talk to Ashley Williams. Ashley, good morning. How are you?
Hi, good morning. It's a pleasure to be on with all you guys.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, Ashley is a self-described fractivist and fracksandivist. I like that.
Trying to coin that for myself, yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of interesting, Ashley. I mean, I've been following this issue for a couple of years on this program. I sometimes feel like I don't do enough because I know it's ongoing, but I can't talk about it every week. It's just, it doesn't make any sense. On the other hand, for you guys living out in LaSalle County, it doesn't go away. It's there every day and every week. And it's interesting that over the couple of years, how you've kind of emerged as a spokesperson and sort of a leader in keeping this issue alive. How do you think that happened?
Well, it's actually been I launched my petition in May of 2013, so pretty much ever since. So I haven't been at it for that long. I don't know. I discovered the Mississippi Sand issue in fall of 2012. That was when they were nearing the end of their permitting process. And, you know, the deeper I delved into that issue, the more horrified I became for LaSalle County and my entire community. And, you know, I was irate, to say the least. And I knew if I didn't act, you know, I don't know. It worried me what the fate was for LaSalle County if someone didn't stand up. I'm the only student I know of in LaSalle County that's fighting this.
That itself is remarkable. Okay. I am cognizant of your age and the fact that you have said, okay, I'm not going to let this stand, and you're young, I'm sure that people in the area are happy to have somebody with that kind of energy involved, because I've seen these issues before and people get tired. They get tired of fighting because they're fighting every day, and they lose, and they get disheartened, and it gets harder and harder. And there you are, putting out petitions and putting together the Facebook page in a relatively short time. You got like 1,500 people on that, and that's probably going to go through the roof. And I encourage people to log on to, if you're on Facebook, you should go to that Facebook page and tell me the name. I'm looking for it right now. I don't have it right in front of me.
Okay, yeah, I can tell you the name. Okay. It's Protect Starved Rock in the Illinois Valley from Fracking and Mining.
Yeah, and if you just type in Protect Starved Rock, it's going to pop up right away. It is a long name, but it doesn't matter, because if you just type in that first part, Protect Starved Rock, the Facebook page, and I encourage people to like it and get involved in that. Let's at this point bring in the other person who's part of this conversation today, and that is Monty Whipple, who lives in Waltham Township, just north of Utica. Monty, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm good, considering the weather, I'm sure. What's it like out there in LaSalle today?
Well, the worst of it hasn't hit yet. We had a couple inches of snow again overnight. But we're waiting for the real wind and blowing to start. I know out in the open areas it's already started. And when you get these light, fluffy snows, boy, it just blows like crazy. And you get these whiteout conditions, and you get spots on the road where it freezes, and you get dangerous driving conditions. So it's a little of everything. But, you know, it's winter in I guess, LaSalle County.
But, you know, you say that, and it makes me think there's something else that blows around like that.
I was just going to say that. I mean, it makes me think, geez, is the sand going to be blowing around like this? I mean, this looks kind of crazy.
As you know, in the studio, I have Stephen Penn from the law firm Penn Rakowski. You've seen this before, and this kind of blowing sand in Wisconsin, because you cover cases in Wisconsin.
Absolutely. Good morning, Monty, by the way. It's nice to have you on the show. Yeah, Mike, you do. And what you will see is the smallest, finest, most respirable sand blowing, and that's the most dangerous stuff out there. We could get into the science of it, but you get into micrometers, which is, if you think of silica, I think the problem people have, let me back up just one, is people think of this as sand. You think of going to a play lot and looking at sand, it's grainy, how can that hurt you? But what we're talking about here, and I'm sure Monty can tell you firsthand, is really very, very tiny respirable particles, microns, and these are spherical silica. And when you deal in the more pure and crystalline the silica is, and the smaller this is, when it becomes airborne, you breathe it in. And because it's so small, it starts embedding its way into your lungs and working its way deeper and deeper. And over time, and you can't expectorate this. So the larger particles, you breathe them in, and we've had this before. You blow your nose, and you'll notice, you know, this, whatever, dust particles. And,
or Petcoke. You're blowing out Petcoke,
right? There you go as well. Right, or asbestos or any of these things, right? But it's the finer materials. And that's the stuff that's going to get into the air. And when you get into these open fields, these open quarries, contrary to what I understand is being said by the folks from the mining and their attorneys, just because something might be in a quarry and underneath doesn't mean winds don't whip through there and bring that dust up. And it's this very fine particulate that gets into the lungs and causes injury. And I think Monty's told it quite well. You're going to get the blowing and the drifting, and there's just no way to stop it.
Well, let
me say this.
Yeah.
The mine that we are working on right now out in Waltham Township, I mean, they basically said there's going to be like a 10 or 15 foot berm around it, but the pile of sand itself is going to be way above that. So the berm is certainly not going to stop it. The fact that the bottom of the quarry may be 100 feet underground, there's going to be some blowing from that, but what's going to stop the sand that's on top? Now, they say that it's going to be wetted down, but, you know, eventually, I don't care, you know, eventually that'll dry out to the point where you get strong winds like we've been having the last few days. And, you know, and the prevailing wind around here is normally blowing, out of the southwest or the south, but in the wintertime it blows the opposite direction. And so it's going to blow right down toward the village of Utica, right down across a couple of restaurants, McDonald's and Subway, and right down, you know, into the area that we're trying to develop for tourism and entice people to come down here. And I can't see that this is any beneficial factor at all for enticing what we would like to develop into a nice community.
I couldn't agree with you more. The wetting down, and I think that's a red herring that is going to be brought up by the quarry proponents. Because the wetting down, you really do want to wet down as you drill. That's an important factor in ventilation and dust control. But the problem is, and I think Monty's right, are these companies going to be wetting down on a regular basis these large piles of sand? I doubt it. Once it's up and in, it's up and in, and you're going to have these large piles of sand. And not only that, Monty, by analogy, you have a quarry 100 feet deep. Well, if you've ever been to a football game at Soldier Field, you know those winds whip in, they come in, they come out.
Yeah.
Wind doesn't mind direction. It'll come in, it'll come out, it'll pick things up.
Right.
It's a problem. I what you're going to see, we've seen before. We have there in Marshfield, Wisconsin, there's a company that makes core doors. So they have hollow doors. They fill the doors for fire code. And back in the day, they used asbestos. We've had clients out of this facility, and there were some epidemiology studies done at this facility. And what they found was people in the neighborhood were coming down with higher rates of disease, of cancer, fibrosis. And what they found was wind patterns were taking this, in the neighborhood, taking this excess of asbestos material out and through the neighborhood. So, in fact, there was some disease caused to the neighborhood by just this facility itself.
So not just the workers that are endangered, but people in the general vicinity as
absolutely
well.
Correct. So, you know, in Monty's situation, what I suspect is coming is, well, we need to do studies. We don't know the wind patterns. We don't know what. But I can tell you this. It's coming. Use your common sense. Monty's absolutely correct. They know where the wind patterns are. They know what's coming. And you don't need 20 years of study to tell you that this is a real potential hazard.
Well, let me say this, because one of our main complaints is we're not talking about just one mine here, because okay. In effect, that's what we are talking about with this mine I'm dealing with.
Yeah, this is the latest one, yes.
Yes, but, you know, you talked about the Mississippi mine just mm-hmm. east of the entrance to Starved Rock on 71. You've also got a new one that is just being established and built just to the east of Utica itself. You got another one just to the northwest of Utica that's up and in the process of being established. You got the one that we are dealing with now. You've already got existing mines right. in downtown Utica. You've got existing mines on the west side of Ottawa. We're just surrounded by them. And so, you know, I don't care which way the wind's blowing, it's going to be blowing off some mine in all directions.
That's a good place to tell the story again, and I want to make sure the people understand when Monty talks about Mississippi, he's talking about Mississippi Sand LLC. That's the name of the company. We're not actually at the Mississippi River. We're on the Illinois River, but the name of the company is Mississippi Sand LLC, and that was the company, you know, in a sense, they did us all a big favor by calling attention to this, by putting it in such a high-profile location, which is the entrance to Starved Rock State Park. You know, these guys probably could have gotten away with it for a long time if they hadn't been so brazen, if they hadn't had so much hubris and said, well, we're going to set up right across the street from the state park. And that called attention to this 2 years ago. And so it has continued to call attention to this issue and to the fact that there are so many mines being dug in the county of LaSalle that pretty soon it's hard to imagine what it's going to be like to even live there. As you've mentioned to me, Monty, you're concerned about the tourist business in the area.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm not a scientist and don't play one on the radio either, so I leave that to the other gentlemen and I guess you have, and Ashley and so on. But, you know, my main concern has always been land use. I'm a farmer. I farm very close to the proximity of the mine or the ground in question here. And, you know, for a long time, the mining territory in LaSalle County bordered on very marginal ground up on a bluff that it wasn't usable for basically anything of any kind except possibly developed into nature trails or something like that. But, it, you know, we mine coal and rock and all kinds of things in this county. But now they're spreading out into real top-quality farm ground. This ground was rated a 95 out of 100 on quality of ground, quality of land. So obviously it's right at the top of the world's rating as far as, you know, growing ag production goes. So that's one issue. The other issue is the Utica, as a tourist town, is a town where people associate with Starved Rock, come down and enjoy the benefits of the beauty of nature and hiking and trails and horseback riding and all that kind of thing. And the way to get to Utica is get off Route 80, go down 178. Well, this sand mine is going to be located just north of that intersection. They've already got a Love's truck stop out there with McDonald's, a Subway, and so on. Perfect spot to start developing that area and take it right down, that development right down into Utica, make a beautiful, attractive area for people to come and enjoy themselves. And you put a sand mine right out there north of that interchange, and that will forevermore take away any further development, any further enhancement of this area in that particular area. I just don't see long-term for our children and our grandchildren that that's just got to be absurd. I just couldn't fathom anybody wanting to do that with the potential that this area has for development. And you look at nearby towns, Ottawa and Peru particularly, they've developed that whole area from their town right out to that interchange where now you've got all kinds of shopping and retail stores and restaurants and hotels and you name it, and it's a beautiful area to see, and it's been developed wonderfully. And Utica, for some reason, just keeps fighting that and wants to keep enhancing, you know, mining in their area, which is a total 180-degree opposite from the tourists that they already have. They get 2 million people a year coming to Starved Rock naturally, and they just fight that. And I just don't understand it when they should be working to develop that even further and get 3 million people there or develop some other interests that people would come down to go along with the Starved Rock area. You know, it just boggles my mind.
That is Monty Whipple, who is a Waltham Township resident just north of Utica. Ashley Williams is also on the phone. She's an activist in LaSalle County. In the studio, Stephen Penn. He's not a scientist. He doesn't even play one on the radio. He's just a lawyer, okay?
There are days we even wonder about that, Mike.
With Penn Rakowski, by the way, their website is dustlaw.com. I want to talk, and we'll start when we get back, Ashley, with you and the never-ending hearing that has been going on in LaSalle County. It's a very strange story, isn't it, Ashley?
Yes, it is.
And I want to talk about that. So hang on. We will be back with all three of our guests. First, I need to give you a tip from the Care of Trees. A lot of you are waking up this morning to yet another round of snow on your landscape plants. Snow and especially ice are capable of causing some real damage on your woody plants. But sometimes the best course of action is to do little or nothing at all. If it's possible, gently, and I emphasize the word gently, remove snow from trees and shrubs. Now, if it has frozen to the plant, the best course is to let Mother Nature do her thing, which is to say, wait until the weather is warm enough for the ice to melt. Yeah, there may be some disfiguration on the tree or shrub, but, you know, sometimes they snap back, they bounce back, and so you should wait to see if the plant can recover on its own by springtime or during the spring. Now, if you have more questions, I suggest you invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your snow and ice-covered trees and shrubs. Call 800-508-9466 for a free consultation. 800-508-9466 or go to thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish Chicago's only local magazine dedicated to healthy and sustainable living. Natural Awakenings is available monthly, and we provide the latest news and trends about healthful living, including alternative and complementary medicine, fitness, good food and drink, healthy kids and families, and even healthy pets. Natural Awakenings also talks about local sustainability, gardening and environment, energy conservation, and green living. We feature local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that each month you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a service in your neighborhood, something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Trying to weather the housing market? Consider replacing your windows and siding. Remodeling Magazine says they're some of the nation's most popular projects today.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling and energy needs. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I have in the studio with me Stephen Penn from Penn Rakowski. Their website is dustlaw.com. On the phone, Ashley Williams and Monty Whipple, both of whom live out in LaSalle County. So what I understand happened is that this sand mine, Ashley, was proposed. Do you know how long ago that was, either you or Monty?
Well, Monty could better answer that for me.
Let me give you just a little bit of background. The group that bought this is a developmental group out of Oak Brook, Illinois, people who are looking to develop, buy ground and develop it into some profitable enterprise. And when this ground was originally bought from the landowners, it was promised or mentioned that this ground would be developed into light industrial or something that would be advantageous to the city of Utica as a means of providing income, whether it be a warehouse for a major industry, you name it, truck depot, you know, some that would fit along the Route 80 interchange there and Route 6 as well. But in the meantime, or other businesses as well. But in the meantime, the economy went into this recession, and all those things supposedly dried up for them. And so the investors in the meantime are looking for a way to recoup the money that they spent to buy up this ground. And all of a sudden, this frac sand industry took off, and they said, well, if they got sand all around Utica already, then maybe there's sand out in some of our ground. And they did some borings, and lo and behold, there was sand down under the ground 50 feet or so. And they said, well, let's see if we can make a nice profit doing that. So they went back to the village board, and they had to redraw up a new contract with the special use, asking for a special use to change agricultural ground and use it for mining. And that happened just, a year or two ago.
You know, and Monty, let me...
Several years ago.
Let me interrupt you for a second. That's exactly what happened over at Starved Rock, too, is that they had to get a special use permit.
Right. Yeah. But instead they got it through the county.
Yeah, that was, you know, and that's sort of the insidious thing here that's been happening. 2 years ago, it went through the county, so it was there was lots of noise made, and it was a big deal, and the county had to vote on it. And now these companies have decided, well, that's just too, that's crazy, because there's too much publicity surrounding that. So we're going to do an end around the county and just annex to these various cities and do it that way. And that way these city governments can make the decision very quietly, and at least theoretically they do it quietly. But you guys stepped up in this case.
Well, yeah. Let me say one more thing. I know Ashley wants to jump in here too. But yes, and in fact, right now, the LaSalle County has a moratorium on further mining because, you know, it's just gone too fast, too quickly here. And they want to get a handle on what all the environmental impacts are before they keep adding more. But in the meantime, this has been in effect for a year or more now, but there's been no new mining applications come before the county because the development companies realize this, and so they go to the cities, and the cities are able to, because of their power over the county and the township, are able to annex the ground into the city, and then the city has sole discretion on what to do with that ground, and in this case, a special use. So the decision rests with the cities, who get all the money. The county gets not a dime out of anything that's mined out of this ground. The township doesn't get a dime out of anything that comes out of this ground. The money all goes to that particular city. And, it gets back to one of my main points, and I think all your listeners need to be aware of this, and I don't know what we can do about this because all the votes are in the cities, obviously. But, you know, whatever happened to the Constitution that we fought a main war over to get our independence that says taxation without representation is wrong? And that's what happened out here. Well, the township of Waltham, the county has no say, so all the powers in the city, we cannot vote for anybody in the city because we're not a member of the city of Utica, but they've got power over the Waltham Township ground, They've got power over the county, and they make the sole decision without anybody having a say-so in what's going on in our own neighborhoods. And something's got to change there, and I don't know how we do it because, all the, like I said, all the votes are in the city if you want to change legislation.
And I'll make one more observation, and that is in terms of the jobs. That's always saying, well, we need to bring jobs to the city, and then they talk about numbers like 30. You know, let's trade our farmland forever for 30 jobs, some of which probably won't even go to people in the city. So it's going to be probably fewer than that, as you probably know, Monty and Ashley.
Well, you know, it was interesting because at the last hearing, and I know Ashley was there, one of the speakers that we brought in, you know, kind of made a point out of the fact that the number of jobs brought in is minuscule compared to the long-range loss of income and potential jobs, and maybe loss of, I mean, how many dollars would it have to take lost from area businesses because of a little less tourism, or, you know, people going through Ottawa and getting to Starved Rock, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, it's very short-sighted because, you know, that mine out there will be mined for maybe 10, 20 years, 30 years, maybe, if they even mine the whole 500 acres they're talking about. And then forevermore, until eternity, that ground will be worth nothing, and there'll be not a job, not a dime brought out of it, and it'll be a total wasteland like somebody dropped a bomb on it. If that's the ground would stay in agricultural production forevermore, it would continue to produce agricultural products, produce the jobs that are related to farming, and possibly down the road produce land that would be suitable for development for a hotel, a restaurant, a truck depot or whatever, and that ground forevermore would be usable. So, you know, it's a huge trade-off that's they're going for a short-term gain as a pair, opposed to long-term loss of income potential and so on.
All right, let's get to this this hearing that involves the Utica Planning Commission and the Board of Trustees. From what I understand, the Planning Commission would take a vote on it and then the Board of Trustees, but the Board of Trustees really doesn't have to follow what the Planning Commission recommends. They can pretty much do whatever they want. And Ashley, you're having another meeting this Tuesday, right? At the Grizzly Jack's Grand Bear Resort. You guys call it just the Grand Bear Lodge, yes. Right?
Yeah, at 6 p.m. Mm-hmm.
And that's because you started this hearing. When was the first day of this?
Back around the 20th of November, Ashley.
So
sounds about right. Yeah.
So we're going from November. So you guys talked and debated this thing at the first hearing, and then when the end of the evening came, you guys basically said,
"Hey, no, we're not done.
We're not done." I love that woman. Hey, we're not done. So you did it to a second. You went to a second day. Then you went to a third day. Then you went to a fourth day. And now this is the fifth time that you're getting together, and from what I read, the total hours is somewhere around 24.
Yeah, well exceeded 24 now. yeah, we just keep going. The last hearing we actually had invited, who Monty was referring to, is Dr. Ron Kosciuszek, who is Emeritus Professor of Ethics, and he spoke about tourism. And then we had Dr. Kristen Pierce, a professor of environmental public health at the University of Wisconsin Eau Claire, for the hearing to provide expert testimony. And that was the last hearing on the 15th.
Uh-huh. And they both gave testimony. Now, what's interesting, yeah, and looking at the testimony, and perhaps Stephen Penn can comment as well, I saw a couple of news accounts that indicate that Dr. Crispin Pierce made a case, but that he got rebutted fairly well. What's your feeling on that, Ashley?
I don't particularly agree. I think Crispin held his ground and did a good job. I think what he was trying to grumble over is that the WDNR is kind of dismissing his findings. He shares all his findings with the DNR, so he was trying to get him on that. And then also he was asking, the village board to seriously think about getting some EPA issue monitors. But, you know, Adrione was saying that the attorney for Aramoni was saying, well, you don't use EPA issued PM monitors, Dr. Pierce. so why are you asking us? But no, I think he did a really great job. I think Dr. Ron did as well. He wasn't able to talk about the Powers report, which he has contributed to, being that Tom Powers wasn't there. But I think he held his ground and did a great job, actually.
And let's clarify a couple of things. Aramoni LLC is the company, Oak Brook Company, investment company that wants to have this built. It would be called Ansel Sands. Is that?
Yes. That's a subsidiary of Woodland Path,
right?
The Oak Brook investment firm.
And I'm
Aramoni's the petitioner.
Okay. And I'm wondering.
I would agree with Ashley. I thought Dr. Pierce did a wonderful job holding his own against the cross-examination by the opposing attorney. And he mentioned a lot of the things that Stephen mentioned earlier in the show and, you know, very much correlate what Stephen said.
Well, you know, I'll just jump in here real quick. I read bits and pieces of the reported cross-examination. In terms of the suggestion by the attorneys for the quarry to suggest that the making of a berm or putting this deeper into the ground may make it somewhat, you may have less level of respirable crystalline silica. That's true. Absolutely. That doesn't make it safe. And I think that gets to the doctor's point on the EPA and using their equipment. Well, here's the thing. The EPA is their equipment is what's used and is accepted. There's some Supreme Court law on it. That's what's used and accepted as providing the proper numbers for exposure levels. So you would want that. Now, why the doctor doesn't use it, he may not need to use it. He's not under the umbrella of federal authority to do anything. His suggestion is this, at least, if you use the EPA equipment, you're going to be in compliance with certain laws, which will give you the numbers which you're going to need, these respirable silica numbers, how much silica sand is in the air. I think it's important to suggest this too, Mike, and perhaps the doctor said it. When the defense comes on Tuesday and suggests these, you know, these numbers, these levels of silica dust in the air are low, they're going to talk in terms of microns and permissible levels. But I'll tell you this, the scientists all agree on one thing. We're not talking about safe levels. We're talking about levels at which the incidence of illness is comparable to what you might see in the general population. We have this issue all the time in the asbestos context, but the dust itself is really irrelevant. It's not a safe level. There is no safe level of breathing pure crystalline silica at under 10 microns. And so what we're doing here is creating an issue to suggest it's quote unquote safe. All we're saying is that if you're under this level, this permissible exposure level, we don't see a level of an incidence of disease and illness over and above, but you're still going to see it. And, you know, tell the person that gets sick from something that, you know, they were safe when they were exposed to X level.
We have no state standard for silicon ambient air here in Illinois, so that's kind of what he's referencing. Also, I wanted to bring up that Utica has been classified as a cancer cluster already.
And that's, I was going to get to that, but you might as well bring it up. I understand somebody very famous is coming to town.
Yes, we actually got word in Miami News 2 on Friday that the California law firm for which Aaron Brockovich works with is now going to be coming out to Utica to collect medical information from certain Utica residents for which they claim deaths were derived from dust and, you know, sickness had ensued from this water pollution. And we're not sure exactly when, but I think that the Protect Starved Rock site actually launched this dialogue. I think maybe these people maybe thought they were alone at first, but once they actually started, you know, seeing these stories circulating, I actually know one of my subscribers said her mother was diagnosed with stage 4 leukemia and father with meningitis and knows 23 people in a 2-block radius of her mother's home who died from or are currently fighting cancer. So this is a big issue.
Sorry.
No, so, Ashley, you may be, I don't know about local communities and their levels of what in the air. I would say this, though. There are certain state levels. And you know, leukemia, your various diseases, you're going to start to see, it'll be interesting when they do this medical monitoring, that's what they call it, to see the incidence of disease. And it isn't just necessarily lung disease. It could be, you see people.
Well, that was going to be my question. I mean, if this is a cancer cluster, it might not be related to silica.
What silica exposure to silica can cause are myriad illnesses from autoimmune disease. You see incidents of autoimmune disease, cancers. Crystalline silica has been called by the World Health Organization a class one carcinogen. You don't get more deadly than that. This is a very serious thing, and it can cause things other than lung disease. Like I say, autoimmune diseases, various things that you're going to need to look at. So they're going to cast a rather wide net, I would suspect, in this medical monitoring to see if there's higher levels of various diseases, not just lung disease.
See, what we're saying is that the high levels of radium and radon and other contaminants that are not exactly tied into these mines, this is what, is to be determined. But the point that we are trying to make is, how could the village be so senseless to welcome further possible contamination from this proposed mine? So that is, that is an important point to make.
Okay, so I want to get us back to this meeting. So we have this meeting coming up, and it probably... There's a good chance you guys are going to finally wrap it up and finish, in that there will be maybe not a vote this Tuesday, but soon there will be a vote. But the weird thing that's thrown into the mix is the idea of annexation, and the possibility that, from what I understand, the company is making noises that, well, if Utica doesn't let us do this, we'll de-annex from them and we'll annex to another town that will let us do it. What do you know about that, Monty?
Well, that's really almost the crux of the problem. I really think the trustees in Utica, agree that this probably isn't the best thing for the town, and would like to say no. But they worry about the possibility that there is a stipulation in the contract that if Utica doesn't fulfill their covenants, that they could de-annex out of Utica and go to a neighboring town such as LaSalle and try to run this proposal through them. Now, we've spent a lot of money as concerned citizens hiring lawyers, getting different opinions from the law firms, and they're just about unanimous in agreement that, no, this will not pertain to our case because Utica has fulfilled their covenants. They've done what they've been asked to do, and you just there's an appellate court ruling that sustains what we're saying. You just aren't going to be able to de-annex out of a city once you've signed a contract that you agreed to annex into it. So we feel comfortable with that. What we're worried about is the village attorney itself stating, well, you take it to another court, another judge may say something different, but our judges are basically saying, once an appellate court makes a ruling, most times nobody else is going to, counter that. So we feel, 90% sure that this is, the law is on our side. We have to get by that other 10% that, people may be worried about. Well, geez, if there's a small chance, I hate to say no.
Well, Monty, I happen to have a lawyer in the studio here.
Yes, I like another opinion. Well, we can take all the good opinions we can get.
Yeah.
Well, I looked at that, Monty, and my initial reaction was, wow, this may be the hook you get them on that just puts everything to bed. I haven't looked at everything in detail, but from everything I've read, it's a very intriguing argument. It's got legs. It's got legal support. And boy, if you win the day there, you've gotten what you wanted on something totally unrelated to everything we've been talking about here today. I think it looks like a winning argument. And again, you're right. There's always that 10% chance. There's always the chance you get a judge that does something. But there's precedent there. You should feel good about it. I was excited to read that.
So anyway, to wrap this up, I would like people to know, people in the area, and anybody not in the area wants to be part of this. It's been going on long enough. The fifth night of testimony this Tuesday, January 28th, 6 p.m. at Grizzly Jack's Grand Bear Resort. That's 2643 North Illinois Route 178 in Utica. That information is on my website. I want you to also go to Protect Starved Rock and the Illinois Valley from Fracking and Mining. Give them some likes, because that's the Facebook page that Ashley has set up. I also want to let folks know that this afternoon, We've talked about this movie on my show before. The Price of Sand, Jim Tittle's film, documentary film, is being shown by the Southeast Environmental Task Force at their office, 13300 Baltimore in Chicago. That's at 1:30. It's really, really a good movie. And it shows some of what you guys have been dealing with already, which is how these companies pit the citizens one against another in these areas. For instance, Monty, you were, from what I understand, you were not offered a buyout of any kind, and you're going to end up sitting a kitty corner from this mine, and yet other people sold to this company, and they were deceived because they thought there was going to be some light industrial stuff there, and now they're finding out that it's a frac sand mine. So there's a lot of intrigue and some amount of deception.
That's a very good point, and my wife brought it up initially, that this type of thing tears communities apart, because you got those who are in support of something because it's going to bring some short-term dollars into a community or into a town. You got those who are dead set against us, and it pits one neighbor against another. In fact, we even had it at our church and at our school, where you got some say, well, you know, it's going to bring in some jobs, and we really need jobs. But, you know, one of the things that Ron Koscheck mentioned, that, you know, Ashley alluded to earlier, the second speaker we had, he mentioned very distinctly, and this is comes out of Dr. Power's presentation, mining towns are not lucrative. You look at mining towns, eventually they become ghost towns. They are strictly blue collar. You think of Appalachia, or the real poor areas, when you associate a town with a mining town, because nobody wants to live there. Nobody wants to, you know, associate or go there for a restaurant or anything like that, because all of a sudden it's in your mind that, oh my God, the air is filled with dust and truck traffic and all this and that. So the short-term gain you get from a few dollars coming in from sand mining nowhere near covers the long-term effects of lost business, lost revenue, lost tourism, and so on. And so we got to get that point across. You know, and I think they do somewhat understand that, but, you know, it's a battle.
Yeah. And Ashley, I'm going to let people also know that you've got a petition, and I've got a link to on my website, Governor Quinn, Stop the Mississippi Sand Frac Mine Near Starved Rock. It has 17,000 signatures already, and I think people should sign on to that, because I'm using the word environmental in air quotes here. Our environmental governor has not said word one about this issue. And he's got an election coming up. If he wants to be perceived as a good guy, this might be a place to start. Anything else you want to add, Ashley?
Well, I greatly appreciate the Mike Nowak bump again. I just wanted to tell everyone that this Mississippi sand issue is an ongoing process. They're fully permitted, yet they have not started mining. What I'm currently doing is seeking information about whether or not the state of Illinois will be purchasing land to a buffer zone between that proposed site, their ornate site, and the eastern entrance of Starved Rock State Park, because it's smack dab along what's referred to as the scenic route to Starved Rock State Park, or Route 71, as you guys know. So I'm seeking out the information. I'm also asking for my petition that for installation of PM air monitors in close proximity to every single sand mining operation in LaSalle County, paid by the companies, but monitored by EPA.
You know, you have to put that on the company. I don't know how you put that on the citizens. They're the ones who are befouling the air. Well, thank you, Ashley Williams, for your continued work. Keep me posted on this and what happens on Tuesday, all right?
I will.
And Monty,
no, I will.
And Monty, good luck to you as well, and I hope to hear from you both soon.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Thank
I appreciate
you so
the opportunity.
Much, Mike. It was a pleasure.
All right. Have a great Sunday.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Stephen, hang on a second. I want to talk to you about one more thing that we discussed a little while ago. But first, I want to ask folks if I were to ask you where gardening starts and you didn't know the answer to that was the word soil, well, you know, I'd be very, very unhappy, as if you had never paid attention to anything I say on this show. And then I would have to order you to pick up a copy of the January-February issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, the issues idea, so you could read the article called Groundbreaking. It happens to be about soil, what it is, what you need, and how you can make yours better. One of the secrets of improving your soil is something called organic matter. Wow.
I can already hear you breaking into a sweat. Seriously, I can hear the sweat. Well, don't worry. The story describes exactly what organic matter is and how to make it work for you. There's also information about dealing with clay, info about core aerating, and more. The magazine also features my column on the inside back page. Uh-oh, I can hear you breaking into a sweat again. My advice, get a towel. Then pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine immediately. Better yet, get a subscription. Go to ChicagolandGardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
Allergies acting up? Trouble breathing? Headaches? Sinus pressure? You're tired? Congested? Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
We're in the home stretch here on the Mike Novak Show. I'm glad you're joining us on a Sunday morning. Wish the topic was a little lighter than what we've got now. Steve and Penn still in the studio with Penn Rakowski. Their website is dustlaw.com. If you ever need somebody to help you with an issue like silica dust or asbestos or pet coke. One of the things that got posted on my Facebook page the other day was this article that Al Jazeera did. I hadn't seen it anyplace else, so, you know, congratulations to Al Jazeera. About the, and I mentioned it earlier in the show, how let's find this here. The Illinois Pollution Board rules against new limits on pet coke and basically saying that, well, it's not an emergency issue. And that got me to thinking about pet coke itself. Some people say, well, it's not toxic at all. But I would think you would beg to differ as the dust law guy, wouldn't you, Stephen?
Well, I would. And, Mike, if I could just go back and give you a quick – I had one last thing to say on a silica issue. In doing the homework, I went to the Centers for Disease Control website, and an arm of that is NIOSH, National Institutes of Occupational Safety and Health. And this is right from them. I'll get you the link. But NIOSH says this, and I think it's very telling about the dust you're talking about. NIOSH's recommended exposure limit, REL, for respirable crystalline silica is 50 micrograms per cubic meter for up to 10 hours a day for a 40-hour work week. This REL is intended to prevent silicosis. However, evidence indicates that crystalline silica is a potential occupational carcinogen, and NIOSH is in the process of reviewing the data on carcinogenicity. That's what I was trying to drive home earlier. You can set levels, but again, when you're talking about a carcinogen, there just aren't safe levels.
Well, you said earlier, no safe level of breathing pure silica. There is no safe level of breathing pure silica dust under 10 microns.
Right, right, correct.
And I'm looking at this story about the pet coke, and they say that pet coke can contain particles that are smaller than 2.5 microns.
Correct, correct. And in looking, as you sent me this homework in the middle of the night, I was up early looking.
Sorry about that.
That's not a problem. If I can give you the good news, in my opinion, is I don't think the Illinois Pollution Control Board said, too bad, so sad. I think what the Illinois Pollution Control Board said was, right size, wrong shape. There was a 50-page opinion written by the board, and it's posted on their website. I didn't have time to read the entire thing. But
well, why not?
Well, you know, I can't. You can't text and drive, but you can read and drive.
Yes.
But what they did say is, what they said was, while this isn't an emergency under the statutory definition, the board does think that rules governing pet coke industry could be improved, and they think it's best to do this via regular lawmaking channels. And they suggest to the board, to the Illinois Illinois EPA to come back and resubmit this under non-emergency rules. And I think all they're saying is this. Look, in what we do, if you bring something before a court on an emergency basis, it heightens everything. You're asking everybody to drop everything, and it heightens the level of what you're asking for. And on the backside, you better have the proofs. And I think all the Illinois, all this pollution board was saying was, we don't disagree that there are problems here. We just think it can be cleaned up.
And the problem is, the longer you wait, the more people are exposed. And some people in the industry say, we haven't had an incident since August. Folks, you know, for one thing, the stuff's been frozen for 2 months. It's been covered
by
snow.
And yet still blowing around in the snow. I mean, Tom Shepard has posted pictures of snow covered.
It's just silly, silly arguments that don't make sense. And you're right. But the normal process takes so long, it seems to me somebody's got to step up and say, well, until we can get this done, here's what we need.
Right. And I think it's not a bad idea to put it out there as an emergency. And even though you fail, you've got the ball rolling. You've got everybody's attention now. So now you can push this thing through.
Well, Stephen Penn, thank you so much from Penn Rakowski, great sponsor of the Mike Novak Show, and I appreciate your commentary on this. You know, I just decided I have to get on the show. Erin Brockovich, if she's going to come to the area.
How cool would that be, huh? You know, I did want to say, you asked me at a break, and I did post some water-related issues to all of this as well.
Great.
On the Facebook page. You know, silicosis is one thing. It's in the air, it's in the water, it's everywhere, and it's no way that we can isolate this, and so we really have to be looking at it hard.
All right. Yeah, that's about it. Hey, you get to join us this time, Stephen. Go green or
go home.
Wow.